Wait.
Oh yeah, I was saying you should do the intro, but that's okay.
And it's lights out, and away we go here at Spa. Hamilton gets away well, Perez as well. Valtteri Bottas has got his teammate right alongside him already. We have a safety car now deployed.
You're saying I should do the intro. Well, hello then. Hi, Wame. How are you? How are you, my friend?
Hi, Lange. We have a special guest.
But this is why you always do the intro. Yeah, okay.
And for the first time, it has nothing to do with F1, but it's kind of connected to what Lewis Hamilton stands for, which this is what he's trying to push, where we're trying to get Black women or Black children in STEM projects or like STEM subjects. So we have a very special guest who is also representative of that. You know, pretty cool. She's amazing. She does amazing, cool stuff. And I hope all the girls and boys listening to this will be very inspired when they hear this. That was what we're supposed to do, Lange.
That's exactly what I'm literally going to use that. Bandy, thank you for joining us. How are you this evening?
Hi, Wame. Hi, Lange. Thank you so much for having me. I'm great this evening. Thank you so much.
Good. Good. But tell us a little bit about what it is that you do. There'll be people, I guess, who listen to this and it's like, you know, we're a Formula One podcast and they're going to be like, oh, they're talking to a pilot, like an actual airplane pilot. Like, can you just tell us a little bit about yourself and that career that you've headed into?
Okay, so I am a pilot. So I am a airline transport pilot license holder. I've been in the aviation field since pretty much immediately after high school. So that was in 2013. So almost 10 years, doesn't feel like it though. it's been a while, I guess.
Because I'm trying to remember that in 2013, I was doing my first day in high school. That was my first year in high school.
Are you serious? Oh,
yeah.
I feel very old now.
I was long out of school by then. But yeah,
I was about to say we're the youngins here.
Yeah.
So my journey with aviation started in 2013, and I've been hooked ever since. I've flown commercially in the sense that I taught people how to fly, and I was an instructor for about 4 years before joining the company that I'm currently employed with. And now I'm on the other side of aviation, where I primarily look at safety compliance and safety oversight. So I'm part of a regulator for aviation in the country. So that's a bit of me.
That's very, very brief. That's really, really cool. Obviously, the regulator is an interesting field, because I think, just again, as a layman or an enthusiast about aviation, the past couple of years,
as a nerd, you can say you're a nerd.
Okay, just a little bit sometimes, right? We've had planes seemingly falling out the sky, right? And not in South Africa. I think we've done a really good job. And I would imagine that a lot of that has to do with the good work of the oversight people, because, you know, we've had a couple of airlines in South Africa grounded. I remember there was some stuff with Mango. Was it last year when they couldn't fly?
Yeah,
Comey this year couldn't fly, but because they were grounded, not because they didn't want to. So that's the sort of field that you're in. You're the guys making sure that the planes don't fall out of the sky. They must stay down if they're going to fall out.
Yes, exactly. So we definitely try our best. We're not perfect, as any organization, but we do our very utmost best to ensure that the layman's or just general passengers are safe, and as well as aviation personnel as well. So it's quite an interesting field to be part of. It's not even just limited to the safety oversight part of it. We also look at approving new aircraft types that come into the country. Oh, wow. So, for example, the Boeing 737 MAX, that was due to come into the country before the pandemic. Comair had orders for the aircraft. FlySafair had orders for the aircraft. But due to the pandemic, that obviously stopped the process and also the accidents that they had had. So it's quite an interesting area to be in. So I'm very grateful to be part of the regulator, because it's definitely expanded my horizons to the various fields in aviation. It's not just about flying an airplane from Joburg to Cape Town every day.
Not to make this about F1. So if F1 was to come into that country, yes, you would be regulating the landing of all teams and personnel.
Not necessarily. So we could assist with the planning purposes for the amount of traffic that would be coming into the country and leaving the country, and ensuring that those planes that come into the country comply with our regulations and they're not just flying into the country and causing accidents in our country, although they're not registered in South Africa. So it's a compliance.
So you would know.
What are you trying to get at?
I see where this is going. in a sense, yes.
Oh, that's amazing. On the front,
my little birdies would be able to tell me.
Exactly. See, this is what I wanted to know.
Well, even from recent events during the summer break that F1 had, that aircraft registration in question, yes, which flew into SA and then left SA and then went into Namibia. Uh-huh. Yeah, we knew.
Wait, what?
I mean, come on, Wame. I thought you of all people would know this one, right? Yeah. No, hard luck.
Break through heart. Let's talk about something else.
Unfortunately, because it's people's lives as well, it's important not to divulge that information because it becomes a security threat at times. So we know about it, but we won't necessarily say anything about it.
Oh, my God.
So, excuse me. I mean, apparently he also makes people sign NDAs. No, I get it.
Exactly.
Wow.
Have you loved was it something you grew up loving? Have you always loved planes?
Yes, I have. So I loved aviation. Well, I loved spacecraft since I was 4. And then from wanting to be an astronaut? I wanted to be an astronaut for the longest time, but we're in South Africa. That's not going to happen. I'm not going to go to NASA as a South African. So then I went into aviation. I was like, okay, cool. This is the next best thing. And went into the field thereafter. But that was the primary interest that drove it. So I've always loved aircraft. Just watching them and just trying to understand how they fly. And I also love watching air crash investigation, which sort of sounds counterproductive. But that's how you learn.
But I would also guess that sort of thing doesn't just it needs to be sort of cultivated. So like, how do you get into the industry? I mean, Wame was joking, she was serious when she said like, I am really an enthusiast, and I do wonder sometimes why I didn't do it. But I actually think to myself, if I wanted to get into aviation, I don't think I'd even know where to start. So just really interested in like your journey about, okay, this is a passion, but then like to getting it to be a thing that you do.
It definitely was a lot about the people surrounding me. So I don't have any family who are involved in the aviation industry. However, at school, I did have people who were remotely had an idea about the aviation field a lot more than I had. So they gave me a starting point to say, start looking at this. These are the subjects that you need to complete. And that's sort of where it started. So at least I had some starting point. And then that's when I started Googling. And I started Googling about flight schools. I learned about the regulator, so where I work for, and I started getting more information to the point where I ended up going on a road trip with my family, and we drove from Joburg to Port Alfred to go and see this place and find out more information. So it's probably beneficial to have a support structure or people in the field, but it's not necessarily what is the do all and end all for you to get into this field. There's a lot more information available now than there was back then. It's a lot more readily available. There's a lot more workshops and just general information to say, I want to be a pilot. You can put that into Google right now and there'll be 1,000 ads of flight schools popping up. They give you all the information of what you need, subjects that you need to complete, marks, if it's applicable, medical requirements. So it's definitely a lot better. It also costs a lot of money, which is something which is unfortunate, because that's something that does hold a lot of interested people getting into this field, but it shouldn't be something to hold you back.
But I was actually, like, one of my favorite movies of all time is Little Miss Sunshine. A fantastic movie. I think everyone in the world should watch it. And like, mm-hmm. but the son like takes a vow of silence. And I'd need to find out from you if this is actually true. He takes a vow of silence until, you know, he's going to become a pilot. But then along the family journey, he learns that he's colorblind, right? Yeah. And then apparently if you're colorblind, you can't be a pilot. Is that like true?
Yes.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So it's pretty rough. I think a couple of years ago, it was a lot more stricter that if you had any sense of colorblindness, you couldn't get any pilot license at all. So your dreams are gone. So part of the prerequisites before you start flight training, you need to complete an aviation medical mm-hmm. to ensure that you are medically fit to fly a plane. So they look at your lungs, they look at your eyes, your chest, and part of that. Yeah, because if you have asthma here or anything that it can obstruct your breathing, then the chances of you
there goes my dream of becoming a pilot.
Well, not necessarily. Like on my side, when I initially did my medical, I didn't know that I had asthma, so it was undiagnosed. But I still got a medical, and now I do know that I have asthma, and I still got a medical. So it, as long as it's managed, and it's not too serious, where are you going to hyperventilate when you're taking off and then, you know, sort of pass out?
Yeah. That's probably not a good thing.
So initially the mental health part of it was completely separate. Unfortunately, mental health, as many other fields that we know with, let's say, healthcare, it's still seen as a taboo topic. People feel that they can't be honest about their mental health because of the fear that, look, I'm going to lose my profession, and not knowing that if I am honest, will I still be able to continue to fly? So there are provisions at the moment to say that you can declare how you're feeling. So if you do have anxiety, you can be honest with it. But if it's seen as too extreme, and again, it might be from a personal measurable to say that I think your anxiety is too extreme for you to be a pilot, therefore you're not medically fit. That's where people don't want to be honest about it. So it is unfortunate, but we're trying to open that conversation so that people can be honest about their mental health. And we don't have pilots taking aircraft and taking them to the ground.
And then zoning out during flying, like, they just zone out. Exactly
Or blacking out from having an anxiety attack or from depression and not realizing how did you get from point A to point B because you were in this mental state, you know. Part of it. But going back to the color blindness thing, you can't get a pilot's license or rather a commercial pilot's license if you are colorblind. At the moment now, you can get a private pilot's license, but with restrictions, and you must be able to fly with somebody So it's not too bad anymore.
You guys are moving with the time.
Yes, we're trying. Definitely trying. Bali as restrictive as it used to be. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I've there was a very like deliberate reason that we like asked for you to be on here. I think Khomotso. Oh, I heard you Khomotso on the pod. Wow, I'm sorry, Wame.
She's done this about twice, by the way.
Really?
Khomotso about twice.
Oh, really? She says I always make her feel like I'm shouting at her when I say that, but it's fine. We know that a lot of industries, particularly in the broader sort of STEMs, you know, your science, technologies, and mathematics fields, representation is something that's topical, certainly top of mind, but like we'd like to see it on the ground. And you said something to me before we started recording this, which was incredible, that there are currently 9 Black women who have an airline transport pilot license. So the people who are listening at the start of this episode would have noticed that you are one of those 9 holders out of plus minus how many people who have that license in South Africa?
We're probably looking at about 2,000 people.
That's incredible.
Holding an airline transport pilot license in South Africa.
And there's only nine
Black females. Women, there's probably I think 100 would be a generous figure. I still believe that it's less than 100 women in general, but in terms of total Black female holders of an ATPL, you have 9 Black females.
And you're one of them. I just want to be clear.
I am one of them. Thank God.
Yeah.
It took a lot of tears to get to that point.
That's exactly it. I can imagine the experience of, I don't know, I would imagine even flight school, the number of people, not everyone who gets into flight school is going to finish it, right? Just like any other sort of scale. So, care to share a little bit of your experiences like that, and where do you see the industry going? Because I can think of already so many parallels again to Formula One, where we've been talking about how that is a not just male industry, but it's a white male industry. In my mind, I know these are loose connections, but when I think about aviation and I think about pilots, especially, I think about the sort of the adrenaline that comes with it. And that can bring out a lot of like sort of machoism is probably the word. So I think I would imagine in my mind there'd be a lot of parallels between the industries. So you care to share a bit about your experience in terms of, you know, being in the industry and where you see it going, especially as it works towards, hopefully, I hope that you're going to say this, that it's building towards being more inclusive, because of course that's the goal, that's the most important
thing. That's the aim.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah, and also before you answer, like, have you ever experienced a situation where they knew that a Black female was flying the plane and someone was like, I don't trust this person to drive me? And by someone, I mean a Caucasian person. I'm just saying they don't feel comfortable in a Black woman driving them or flying them, actually.
Yes. So if I can go back with the history, and then I'll get back to your question, Wame, is that even when I started and I started training, out of 30 people in our class, there were probably only 2 Black females in that class. So already the demographics are extremely skewed. I think there might have been another female. So there might have been three females in the classroom in total. So the percentage of women ratio to males in the classroom was already quite skewed. And that's just in a learning environment. Now, to the point where I then became qualified, it's like, great, you have this qualification, but you're still second guessed, and you need to prove yourself a lot more to be like, are you competent or not? So going to that element of somebody questioning you to be like, but who are you to tell me? Yes, sure, I have a lot more hours than you do, but I'm not comfortable with a woman flying with me, or I'm not comfortable with a Black female teaching me how to fly, or a Black female telling me that I can't fly because what does she know?
Because you're like teaching them as well. You're coaching them.
Yes.
That's intense.
Teaching them. And towards the end of that instruction portion of my career, I was doing a lot of testing and checking of competency. So I'm a standards-based person. You could say I'm a perfectionist to a certain extent. So I like things to be done the right way. It's black or white. And because of that strict nature, or that perfectionism part of it, it was seen as sort of negative to some people. Some people took it positively. But again, as a Black female, how can you tell me that I can't fly? How can you tell me that my knowledge is not up to standard? So you have to prove yourself. You have to fight for your position and for that respect from your colleagues, and also from people who are not even qualified at that point in time. So it's rough, very, very rough. You have to fight for your position at all costs. And if somebody, let's say if Peter is good, you need to be 50 times better than Peter, if not 100 times better than Peter. So if Peter shows up for his flights an hour before, as a Black female, you must show up for your flights 2 hours beforehand. Your pass mark must be, the benchmark is 75%, you must be passing with 90%. You have to be better and you have to prove yourself. So even with the comparisons, we've seen it in F1, we've seen it with Sir Lewis Hamilton, having to prove himself consistently and people still not seeing that greatness in him. We've seen his greatness, but he has to be better and he has to push himself and show that he is good at what he does. So it's rough. However, I do foresee that this industry is going in the right direction. There's still a lot of hurdles at the moment, especially with the pandemic. A lot of people lost their jobs. A lot of Black females lost their jobs. And it's slowed down the momentum that we had before the pandemic. However, from what I'm seeing and the recovery of the industry in South Africa, the momentum is regaining its strength. So I think we're on track in a sense. We're not there yet, but hopefully in the next 5 years or so, we should have at least 50 women with an airline transport pilot license in South Africa.
Yeah.
Fingers crossed.
I'm like, oh gosh, why am I sounding like I'm inspired now? I'm just like, no, but I mean, it's so important. And thank you for like your openness and honesty and sharing your experience of it. And, you know, there's something, you know, that I don't like, but it does feel inevitable, which is when the people mm-hmm. who break the ground, right, have an extra burden. Oftentimes that they didn't ask for. So, you know, I find it absurd how, for example, when Sir Lewis will be, do you guys remember the race in Canada when there was some anti?
Wait, did you just call him Sir Lewis?
I did call him Sir.
I was about to say, I think this is the first time I've ever seen you refer to him as Sir Lewis.
Guys,
I'm so shocked.
Even. In your tweets, I've never seen a reference to Sir Lewis. Wow.
You don't even call him Lewis. You call him Hamilton. Oh,
anyway, right, Sir Lewis. I think it was in Canada earlier this season. There was some sort of protest group about climate change, and they were protesting Formula mm-hmm. One. And to my vague recollection,
it wasn't in Canada.
Was it
wasn't
Canada. Was that not Silverstone?
It was Silverstone.
It might have been both, but regardless of which race it was, I noticed how when these protests were happening, because Lewis is so openly pro-climate, you know, renewable energy, like let's make these things happen. He's the only person mm-hmm. who gets asked about it, right? Mm-hmm. So like all other 19 drivers are chilling there, like marinating, being asked about the weekend or what did you do last weekend,
what their favorite food is.
Yeah, what's your favorite? Right, and so I think there's a Exactly. Mm-hmm. So there's also like a, I would imagine a parallel where, you know, when you are one of the first Black people, first Black woman, you know, there's a burden and a level of expectation that is placed unfairly on your shoulders, but it is there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when we have those 50 Black women with their ATP licenses, you know, I think they'll be looking to people like you to who would have been the face of something like this. And I think it's incredibly important and well played to you, honestly. I'm genuinely quite inspired by
that.
Thank you. But
and also as you were also talking about just how you're teaching people and, you know, being a teacher and also just being that, I couldn't help but think about how you could also take aviation into F1 because teams do need to fly all over the world, you know, like you could look into that. And it's just, it's not as limiting as you think it is. I always say that F1 is just like a huge market of jobs. Like there's lawyers, there's PR, and there's PR and there's aviation as well. It's just a huge market. It's a money-making machine, basically.
But I mean, isn't it, Mumbai's experience is the same? Like, I mean, the fact that you got your license, but like you're literally a regulator now, right? Like it just shows like the breadth of the ways to get into it. But I think, you know, that's actually a nice place to segue into this multifaceted industry sport called Formula One. Wame, I think the last time we spoke, there was a triple header. Red Bull, the last time I checked, I think they won all three races.
Oh my God, of course, Lange, of course. Oh, but of course. As if we don't watch races, as okay. We know where
this is a voice only pod. And but for the people who can't see, Mbali's pretending that she can't see me. She's like suddenly making weird hand signals, and it's just like, oh my gosh, I can't hear you guys. I've lost you. No, she can hear me.
I've blocked whatever statement was made there for my own.
Oh, she's just like me. Yeah, she's just like me. Sometimes you just block out Lange, like you pretend like he's not there.
Okay, all right. So Mbali, you're also a Hamilton fan, Mercedes fan, then I presume.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Where did your interest in Formula One come from? I'm interested, did you sort of also enjoy it growing up? Did you find any parallels again with your interest in aviation?
So the interest in F1 started with a PlayStation F1 game.
Yeah.
That my dad bought for me.
Oh, yeah.
So that was the first ever racing car game that I got. So I was like, oh, I'm just going to get this F1 game. Obviously, my dad was like, get this one. So he definitely prompted that quite a bit. So I would play that game probably every weekend. And the Monza circuit was my favorite circuit. Even watching the last race, I was like, I remember these trees. I remember just seeing the layout. I was like probably 10 years old, but it's so ingrained in my memory. So that's where my interest peaked. And then I would watch races with my dad on Sundays. So again, it became a family relationship thing with, it would be my dad and my thing. And we'd watch these races to the point where it even expanded to watching the Le Mans 24-hour race. So my interest in motorsport grew just from a PlayStation F1 game. And now we are here. all the way up into 2022, still watching F1. I definitely had a bit of a break when I was in high school. I wouldn't watch it as dedicated as I am at the moment, where I would watch every single race or try to watch every race every weekend.
But yeah, that's really interesting. But Wame, we've got to, you know, leave the triple header behind. We've got Singapore coming up. How do you rate your boys' chances this weekend?
Let me tell you, if there's one thing that this year has done for me, is that it's broken me. I used to be the most positive Mercedes fan on my timeline. Everyone will tell you, the last time when we went into Monza and everyone was asking me, your predictions, and I'm like, predictions? Why are you guys asking me that? Because most of the time when I predict something, it happens, right? But then Like with Monza, I'm just like, I have no expectations. I'm not even watching practice. Whatever happens, happens, you know. But they did fairly well in Monza. I didn't expect them to do that well in Monza, actually. I was actually really shocked. I'm like, I was expecting Lewis to get stuck in a DRS chain, not even make, I didn't even think it was going to make it into the top 10. However, Singapore is another street circuit. And yeah, we don't have like a great track record when it comes to street circuits. I mean, you look at our Baku pace, our car was bouncing up and down everywhere. Mm-hmm. Monaco, you know, like there was no perfect setup for Monaco, you know. By the way, guys, Langa's dancing, listening to me talk about our struggles. Like, he's literally dancing.
No, I'm just remembering.
Like, see the joy in his eyes.
Yeah, I just know that like his calm is gonna come, like it is gonna come, you know. And he has this thing where he's like, he's untouchable at the moment. No, it is gonna come. Just like Ferrari having a car now, we will get to see a Red Bull downfall again, and for the Esmad just next year. That's not the point.
Next year, no, come on, now.
Bet on it, actually.
Bet what? Like, I don't want to take your money.
I don't want to take your money. It's sure, you still owe me a bottle of whiskey.
Your money.
See, exactly. And you still owe me and Oliver a bottle of whiskey because you said Mercedes will never smell P2. If you look at the standings right now, you just look at the standings and whatever Ferrari's doing. He must just start preparing. Just go to a bottle store tomorrow. Like, I'm not saying buy anything. I'm just saying just go to a bottle store. Just... you can go look at the prices and then...
I will buy it with absolute pleasure, but like... okay, all right, no, it's fine. because I don't actually know how Ferrari have bottled this. And like, look, you know, Ferrari, you know, I don't know. Like, I'm disappointed in them because I really thought that they were going to give us a proper championship fight this year. When I say us, I don't mean Red Bull. I just mean like the wider Formula One community, right? It's going to be a battle between two constructors, which was, you know, sort of the same element that we had last year. And like, they've gone to nothing. I thought, if you asked me 2 months ago, right, about who would win this weekend, I was like, it's Ferrari guaranteed. High downforce circuit. Street, you know, they did really well in Monaco until they didn't, you know, like, like they don't really care about the bouncing as much. Like, they don't care that their guys bounce. And Singapore is a heavy circuit, but it doesn't compromise performance. And I don't know. I don't know. And like, I think it's even for me, like the idea that Red Bull could possibly win every race for the rest of the season is like, that's not good.
Painful.
That's not good. Like, it's not good for the sport.
Oh, it's not good. Oh, really? Oh.
No, listen, really? I'll be happy. Sadistic. I'll be happy. Like, I just need Max to win the championship at Suzuka.
But let me tell you, what Langa did.
Yeah.
I have a video evidence of it even. When we were like, I know every Hamilton fan or Mercedes fan during the like formation lab, really. And we all stand up because we're all nervous because Lewis has been like part of lap one incidents a lot. Yes. So Langa was pretending to be nervous in Monza, and everyone was just like, so we had a viewing party, and we had everyone there. And Langa was the only one pretending to be nervous, and we were all just shocked, like, sir, please sit down. Why are you pretending? So he does this thing where he pretends to be nervous. Like, you know, you're gonna win this, you know, like, you don't have to act, you know, we're all watching the same race. I can
we know
you guys are gonna do good. Yes. And it's just like, what do you mean? Like, he has this thing where it's a Red Bull thing. I've noticed it's a Red Bull supporter thing where they all have this underdog mentality. They think the underdogs, yeah, and like they like, you know, came up against all odds. Because what do they need? Like, they want to be Lewis Hamilton so bad. Like, if it's a team that wants to be Lewis and Mercedes, it's
Lewis.
This is incredible slander. Like, a guy can't even be nervous. You know what? We're always here talking about like mental health and stuff. And here is a guy expressing his emotions. And there you're telling me that I'm faking it. I'm upset. I'm upset by this, very, very much. but Mbali, how have you enjoyed the season?
Oh no, a Red Bull person.
Wow, But how have you enjoyed the season as a whole? I mean, I'm interested in people's perspectives, because there are a lot of people who are saying, well, you know, Red Bull is just so far ahead, it's boring. Other people see the fact that, like, every team has a point, you know, more than one point, and that hasn't happened for like 3 years. Like, Williams has picked up points. There've been some really fun battles. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. There've been some really great battles. Haas at the beginning of the season, and then Alpine suddenly looked like they might have a little bit of the dog in them, but then you know, they have a meltdown. But have you enjoyed the season? I don't know. Do you want to compare it to 2021?
I think from my expectations of what I had for this season, it's been disappointing and hurtful, because especially with the how the 2021 season ended, my expectations were high that, you know what, we're here on a vengeance. We need to get back to where we were and get back to where we should be. So starting the first few races where it's like, okay, there's a problem with the car and there's a consistent problem with the car, and it's just not getting better. That's been disappointing in that aspect for the team that I support. However, looking at, like you said, the rest of the field, it's definitely felt a little bit more competitive. There isn't this widespread difference between the top teams and, let's say, your Haases, your Alpines, your Williams. Everyone has a fair fight, which has been quite entertaining to see. Because previously they were all sort of competing for the bottom of the grid. But at the moment, you don't really know what you're going to get in the mid-table. So that's been a good element to it. There's been a couple of races which have been boring, I'm not gonna lie, where I've begged for a safety car to come through, because it was that boring, where it's either a DRS train or it's just one person leading the entire race, and there wasn't any entertainment to it.
Yeah, so Imola was dreadful.
It's been a mid DRS.
You guys watch Imola?
Imola?
I think I did.
I definitely did.
Yeah. I saw that DRS train and I'm like, yeah, no, I'm not doing this. And then I said,
I think I've already blocked it from my memory, because of how painful it was.
And if there's one race I stopped watching, it's Imola. Like, I saw that DRS train, I think lap 15, I was like, yeah, no, he's not going to do anything. And the car was just not operating that
week. I'm like,
yeah, this was a heartbreak, and I stopped. But I had said that Ferrari's not going to win in Imola, and everyone was just like, no, you're lying, you know, it's not going to happen. And what happened?
It was one of Max's stronger performances, though, to be fair. Like, that was like,
no one cares.
He did really well that weekend, you know, and had to, as he was waving past people.
You know what I miss for the season?
Yeah.
Something that I greatly miss is the DNFs. The amount of random DNFs from Red Bull coming through and from Ferrari, that was entertaining. You know, so I think that should come back, hey? I think that would revitalize the season.
Oh my god, Bahrain.
A Checo DNF.
Imagine a Red Bull DNF in Interlagos. That would actually be such a great race. Now that I think about it.
No, it can't happen.
I think we need to bring it into...
We need to fix things in Brazil.
We need to bring it into existence. And a DNF in Abu Dhabi would also be very, very nice. You know? Dust.
But I mean, do you have any predictions? Because I'm also like, you know, because with Singapore and Japan, two circuits we've not been to since COVID, which is actually really crazy when you think about it. But do you guys have any predictions for the next two weekends? Is there anything that you think that might surprise us? Wama, you look very unimpressed right now.
I'm thinking about it, and I'm like, you know what? I can say that I'm not expecting much from Mercedes, but they also have had this pattern where they do really bad in practice, which is practice really. And then you look at quali and they have like a decent pace, but somehow like the garage messes it up somewhere, you know, and then we go into the race and have a decent pace, and then they somehow end up on the podium. My predictions for Singapore really are just that there's going to be one DNF, there's going to be one strategy mess up from the red team or the silver arrows. And yeah, so it's going to be a Mercedes and Red Bull battle again, just like Zandvoort. I just have that prediction.
I definitely agree with that. Also looking at how the weather's looking for this weekend, we're expecting a hot, humid type of environment, but with rain on top of that. So
oh, wow, setups. Is it gonna rain yeah, at it's night rain. In Singapore?
So it's going to be quite the interesting race to see. So I think in terms of setup and strategy, we know with our favorite red team, it's yeah, I don't have faith in them, unfortunately, after the last couple of races we've seen from them. And I do hope that Mercedes sorts out the issues that they are having, and that we can see a good competitive race between Red Bull and Merck.
If it's hard, I need one engine from the Bulls to blow up. Just blow up, just for fun. Like, I can be up doing practice there. Like, I just need it to blow up, you know. That would make me really happy. See, Langa, I didn't say during the race, I said during practice. So you should actually look at it. Like, you should actually do that. Something really nice.
I think it was
it was
Hungary where Max's engine I think went in free practice three or quali three, if I remember correctly. And Christian Horner came out afterwards and said that engine had probably about 10 kilometers left, which means that like they had intended to run it in the race. If it had blown, or rather, if it had only blown 10 kilometers later, it would have been a DNF in the race because it would have been on its way to the grid. So there's a lot of luck. But I'll tell you what, I'll tell you my one hot take. And I'm not pulling the Mickey, I think Hamilton's going to win Japan. And I think that car, the characteristics of the Zandvoort, what we saw at Zandvoort, I think Hamilton's going to win Japan. And that worries me.
I need your boy to win in Japan so Lewis can win in Interlagos. I don't want to see a Max on that podium. Like, I would kill myself, and I'm very suicidal, so that's not the point. Oh my god.
Excuse me.
Okay, guys,
the Twitter persona is thoroughly coming through, actually, isn't it? Like, wow.
No, but Twitter, by the way.
Pardon? You're currently
blocked.
I can't.
Yeah, good. Good. I'm glad. So peaceful without you there, you know. Have you not noticed? I don't know, Mali, do you follow Huame? Like, yeah, it's been what, 24 hours? How long is Jack or who's the new owner?
You blocked out of it.
How long is he keeping you in jail?
I have noticed. I haven't seen tweets on the TL.
It's been more than 24 hours. I don't like talking about this. I called someone something, and Jack was like, no, that is hateful contact.
Okay, I see.
Yeah. And Jack was like, that's hateful contact. So now I'm locked out of my main account. But because like I follow Lewis so much and I love Lewis, he says, "Still, we rise." I have another account. Well, I have three, but that's not the point.
Oh wow, you've got so many backup accounts as well.
No, one is a burner with Unravel, and then the other one is our podcast page, okay. And then my main account. So I have three accounts.
Okay, at least. Well, not too shabby. Shame. I'm sure they'll let you out of Twitter jail soon. Hopefully, it's before the race.
You gotta repent.
Apparently,
you gotta repent
for
first.
More than a week.
More than a week.
Repent for what?
What did you say? Okay, you said you called someone something.
Give us,
okay, fair enough.
Give us that person's at. We'll report their account.
Oh, actually, we can do that.
Actually, we need to do that. The funny thing is, it happened in the morning at 7 a.m. So, like, my day was ruined already. It happened on a Monday. So, like, my week was already ruined. But that's okay, because you can't keep a good woman down.
still we rise. So let's make a plan. Let's find the app and we'll dig.
Yeah, still we rise.
I love that. But I think I'm very conscious of Buddy's time. Thank you so much. I certainly enjoyed listening to your journey, listening to like your clear passion for the industry and the things that you do. You genuinely I think are an inspiration. And again, I'm just waiting like to when I read about the 50 Black women with an ATP license. It's so important, and you will have been a big reason for that. And so, yeah, thanks again for joining us.
Thank you guys. I really appreciate this. It's my first podcast experience as well. So this is definitely going to be a memory that I'm going to carry for the rest of my life.
Then it's out there on the internet too. Internet never forgets.
Exactly.
And next year around, next after the summer break, we're just going to invite them. We don't have any ulterior motives. It's not like we want to know if like Jalapeños is going to happen.
Certain people are coming into the country.
Yeah, exactly. We're just going to just like have you on our podcast and have you as a guest again.
Thank you. I'll keep take your note number. Of that.
All right. Okay. Take care. Ciao. Bye. All right. Enjoy. See you on Twitter.
Bye, guys.